From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carol Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. We got a great show for you today. Music historian Peter Guralnick will be joining us to play our games later on. But first, I have to say, in the spirit of this week, we wanted to start the show with a big opening ceremony showcasing the history and culture of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. So we worked on it. We had our researchers go in it. And it turns out, basically, our history boils down to 600 fart jokes and Carl imitating Britney Spears.
Hit me, baby, one more time.
That's pretty much it. So having dispensed with that, let the games begin. Give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. And win the prize that's better than gold. Carl's voice on your voicemail. Let us welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hello, this is Robin Levins in Austin, Texas.
Hello, Robin. How are you?
I'm splendid. How about yourself?
I'm fine. I haven't come across many men named Robin.
Actually named after my dad.
I understand. And what do you do there in Austin?
I'm a computer programmer, a code monkey.
Really?
Yes, indeed.
Oh. I got nothing. Well, welcome to the show, Robin. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First up, a writer for the Washington Post, Ms. Roxanne Roberts is here.
Hello. Hello, Robin. You don't sound the least Texan to me.
Thank you.
Next up, it's Vermont's finest non-maple syrup-based product, Tom Beaudet.
Hello, Robin.
And next, a comedian performing at the North Shore Music Theater in Beverly, Massachusetts, April 19th, Paula Poundstone.
Hey, Robin.
Well, Robin, welcome to the show. You're going to play Who's Carl This Time. Of course, Carl Castle is going to read you three quotations from the week's news, correctly identify or explain just two of them. Ready to go?
I am.
All right, here is your first quote.
Do not use on your face because it contains something very dangerous.
That was what a reporter was told about the water in her hotel. Her hotel is one of the many venues apparently not ready for what big event?
That would be the Olympics.
The Sochi Olympics, yes. Very good. As the 2014 Winter Games began in Sochi, Russia, the big opening ceremony on Friday revealed the theme of the Games this year. It's the Hunger Games. Anybody who survives gets a medal.
It does. It makes you proud of our own country, I think, doesn't it? A place where you can get, you know, a clean, comfortable room for the lowest price of any national chain.
Here's the crazy thing. These Olympics cost $50 billion. That's more than all prior Winter Olympics combined.
Wow. Seriously?
Yes.
Yeah, all of them.
No. And they probably spent, what, a couple million on the village?
Well, apparently, when the media arrived in the week leading up to the games, their hotel rooms weren't ready, or they weren't finished, or they weren't working. You heard Carl talking about the water in one hotel. But don't worry. The Russian officials announced they're importing fresh, clean water from West Virginia.
They didn't even take care of their own teams in the past. What are the odds of them taking good care of everyone's teams, you know? It's like when in your neighborhood there's the house where you hear a lot of screaming and, you know, there's beer bottles on the front lawn and stuff. You know, you don't trick-or-treat there. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah. For some reason, so much of this weird news coming out of Sochi has been about toilets. That we saw the double toilet, one bathroom in a hotel that appeared to have two chests of drawers where the toilet should be. And then there was one bathroom that appeared to have, facing the toilet, a row of chairs for spectators. But no, it looks like, wow, as appropriate for the Olympics, it looks like the judges stand. Perfect twos all around.
Oh.
Robin, here is your next quote.
Wow. So much grow. Such wow.
That was one of the many people commenting in a post by Mark Zuckerberg celebrating the 10th birthday of what this week?
Facebook.
Yes, indeed. Facebook is 10. And it makes it like, wow, where did this decade go? Oh, yeah, we wasted the whole thing on Facebook. It's become such a part of our lives the last 10 years, Facebook. Think about all the things we'd be doing if Facebook hadn't been invented, if it didn't exist. You'd be walking up to people, shoving your baby in their face, yelling, look at him! Like, hello, 1,000 people who I've met at some point in my life. Thank you from traveling all over the world to meet in this large auditorium. I just wanted to tell you I had some amazing salmon for lunch.
I'm always, people post about how happy they are and how, you know, little Johnny's doing everything they'd hoped. But I think that if we had to meet and, you know, you could actually see little Johnny and you'd realize, well, you know, yes, but he hates you.
And you'd feel better.
Yes, sadly, that's the kind of person I am. I'm going to be honest. But yes, I would.
You know, my son told me not to friend him. He wanted that one specter of, so he wanted that one place where he kind of felt like I didn't have, you know, any way of kind of seeing what his life was like.
I had that. My son asked me to just divide the house and have a key for his side and to leave a pile of money by the door.
All right, Robin, here's your last quote.
I had an awkward day. I had to call David Letterman and tell him he didn't get the Tonight Show again.
That was somebody joking this week about leaving his job. Who was it?
Jay Leno.
Yes, indeed. Jay Leno is once again being fired from the Tonight Show. Like a lot of people these days, he's losing his job to a robot. From now on, the Tonight Show will be hosted by a Roomba that can tell Obamacare jokes. This is interesting. The Center for Media and Public Affairs actually counted up all the jokes Jay Leno has made as host of The Tonight Show. They divided them by target. It's an amazing trove of data. Jay Leno told 4,607 jokes about Bill Clinton, his favorite target, only 3,239 jokes about George W. Bush, and among celebrities, O.J. Simpson topped the list, 795. Can you imagine if someone did this to you, counted up your jokes, analyzed them? Well, sir, apparently you've gone with the "that's what she said" joke 47 times last month, and it's not getting any funnier, sir.
No, what organization did this?
This is the Center for Media and Public Affairs that we saw it.
And there, how many people work there, do you think?
A bunch.
Yeah, because that is one waste of time, I think.
Actually, I think my long-suffering wife, Rita, does that with my jokes.
Oh, that she tallies your...
I think so.
Your subject matter?
She gets all my material first, you know.
Except she expresses her data collection just by saying, that one again.
No, what she says is, just because I didn't laugh doesn't mean I didn't get it.
Carl, how did Robin do in our quiz?
Robin had 3 correct answers, Peter, so I'll be doing the message on his own answering machine or voicemail.
Well done. Thank you, sir. Congratulations. We want to remind everybody they can join us here most weeks at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Illinois. For tickets and more information, go to WBEZ.org, where you can find a link at our website, waitwait.npr.org. Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Roxanne, just like any town would do, Seattle fans took to the streets and, well, rioted after their team won the Super Bowl. But in Seattle, they did it slightly differently. For example, one massive, out-of-control, rioting mob was seen doing what?
Drinking coffee.
No. I'll give you a hint. Like, tipping over a car is one thing. Fine. Jaywalking, though, is another.
They served as cross guards.
No.
No.
Shall I just tell you?
I think you should just tell us. How many hours
imagine
we got?
Imagine this crowd of crazed, probably drunk football fans coursing through the streets of Seattle, getting to a street crossing and stopping and waiting for the light to change. You can see it on video. There they all are. It's like, oh, wait, little red hand. All right, let's go.
Well, that Seattle is... changed. When I lived in Alaska and in the late 70s, I came down the ferry to downtown Seattle. I was on First Avenue. I had no idea what was going on. I was a complete rube. And I'm walking down First Avenue, and suddenly this mob of humanity starts running up the street toward me from the kingdom. And they're coming, and I thought something must have gone horribly wrong down there. And I turn and I'm running with the crowd. And I'm saying, what's going on? What's going on? They said, the Sonics won. The Sonics won. The Sonics had won. And
apparently.
And I don't recall us stopping for the crosswalks then. But those were the old days.
Yeah, yeah. That's when the town was crazy.
Yeah, that was when it was lawless.
Now, it wasn't all so civil. There were some arrests Sunday night. There were some small fires. Craziest of all, trash cans were overturned so citizens could find any recyclables that were placed there accidentally. You guys watch the Super Bowl?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I thought that Seattle was overdoing it. They had the game won.
Should they have done what you do when you play ball with your 2-year-old or something, where you go, oh, he's going to get me. He's going to get me.
That would have been.
Oh, no.
That would have been.
Oh, he's catching up. No.
No. And they probably still wouldn't have gotten it.
Yeah.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Kassel. We're playing this week with Paula Poundstone, Tom Baudet, and Roxanne Roberts. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Will Passy from Ithaca, New York.
Ithaca, beautiful Ithaca. It's gorgeous. What do you do there?
I am a graduate student at Cornell University.
I see. A fine land-grant institution there in the mountains.
That it is.
What are you studying?
I am getting my master's in industrial and labor relations.
Ooh. Industrial and labor relations? Does that mean like a union thing?
I could go into unions, but odds are I'm just going to be the HR manager that everyone loves.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, it's nice to have you with us, Will. You're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Will's topic?
I can't believe it's been 10 years.
Facebook isn't the only thing turning 10 this week. We read a story about something else reaching its 10-year milestone. Guess the real anniversary and you'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine or voicemail. Ready to play?
I have one question.
Yes.
Is Roxanne on the panel?
She's sitting right here.
Well, then there's no need to put up the charade. I choose her story.
You know... Yes, but what if we knew you would do that and assigned Roxanne to lie to you?
Well, I just have to go with my gut, no matter what.
All right, well, let's see what happens. First, let's hear Why Not from Roxanne Roberts.
Well, Will, this one is particularly apt for you. You're fired. No, really. To celebrate the 10th anniversary of The Apprentice, Donald Trump has come up with a new twist on his famous catchphrase, a spin-off reality show where contestants from the past decade will travel around the country actually firing people. Trump has teamed up with Hendrix Strategies, a human resources firm that specializes in corporate layoffs, and with cameras rolling, one of his apprentices will sit down with employees already slated for the chopping block and deliver the bad news. Look, nobody likes losing their job, and it's hard for most bosses to actually say these words, Trump told the Wall Street Journal. We're giving them a chance to hear it from a celebrity who's been there, which has to lessen the blow a little. Trump said that all the ex-workers will get counseling and job training, and one lucky person will get a chance to work for his empire. Quote, getting fired will be the best thing that ever happened to them, he promised.
I'll pick that one.
Yeah. The Apprentice, the TV show, celebrates its 10th anniversary by sending its alumni around the country to actually fire real people. Your next story of a 10-year anniversary comes from Tom Baudet.
10 years is a long time to go to work without pants on. Just ask Scott Simon. Or better yet, ask mailman Kenny Martin of Walled Lake, Michigan. Scott Simon works in radio from a climate-controlled studio. Kenny Martin works in the neither rain nor sleet nor snow hard scrabble world of the U.S. Postal Service. But after 10 years braving sleet, snow, and snarling dogs, Martin, the leggy mailman of Walled Lake, has given up his trademark shorts for a pair of official U.S. Postal Service pants. Asked if the change was prompted by this winter's record cold temperatures, Martin said, "Yeah, that and getting older. My tolerance is less because we've been through this before and I'm no problem, but this year, man." Well said, Kenny. You can only imagine the decade of horrors a mailman in shorts has had to live through. When asked if he'd ever gotten completely wiped out on the ice, smashed his head on the concrete sidewalk, blood spewing everywhere, onlookers shrieking, Martin replied, "No, but I got attacked by turkeys twice this year." Ladies and gentlemen, the legend that is Kenny Martin.
A mailman, after 10 years of wearing only shorts, no matter the season, decides to put on long pants. And your last story of somebody celebrating the big 1-0 comes from Paula Poundstone.
This week marks the 10-year point of an epic financial struggle, including relentless tax trouble, toxic mortgages, record incarceration recidivism rates, and just plain bad luck. 19 and 17-year-old Colin and Blaine McPike of Boyne City, Michigan, have been playing the same Monopoly game for 10 years. "We started on a snow day, and our mother brought us lunch while we played," says Colin. "They took breaks for school and sleep and the occasional shower," they laugh, "but have played for no less than 15 minutes and up to 18 hours each day for 10 years. Blaine bought Mediterranean Avenue on his second trip around the board, and in 10 years it has earned him over $20. Neither player has yet landed on the powder blue Connecticut Avenue, so it is still up for sale from the bank. "They've always been quite competitive as brothers," said their mother, Catherine McPike. "The truth is, Blaine hasn't really wanted to play for the last 7 years, and now he'd like to go to college. But he won't forfeit the match, and he can't win because Colin won't trade him North Carolina Avenue and Pacific Avenue for Park Place. Colin, on the other hand, wants nothing to do with the real world. He says the money's too big."
All right. Here are your stories of a 10-year landmark from Roxanne Roberts, the 10th anniversary of the TV show The Apprentice being celebrated by having former contestants actually fire people in real life, from Tom Baudet, a mailman who, after 10 years of wearing only shorts, gave in to the needs of winter and put on long pants, or from Paula, two brothers reaching the 10-year anniversary of the start of a single game of Monopoly. Which of these is the real story of a 10-year anniversary in the news?
Well, no disrespect to Tom or Paula, but I don't know if you guys heard the same stories that I did. I'm going to go with Roxanne.
Okay, your choice is Roxanne's story. Well, to bring you the real answer, we spoke to the person celebrating this 10-year anniversary.
Pants are just, to me, very uncomfortable. They fall down, they pinch, they chafe. They got the little punchline around here. It's like, how cold is it? Oh, Kenny's wearing pants.
That was Kenny Martin, the mail carrier who just donned long pants for the first time in 10 years. You followed your heart, and I cannot fault you for that. But sadly, Roxanne was not telling the truth.
Yep.
So you didn't win, but you didn't earn a point for Roxanne. You did that for her.
Thank you,
by
Will,
choosing her story and making, if I know her, very happy.
Well, you're welcome.
Will, thank you so much for playing.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Sequined, cut off, pleated pants on. Ooh, I am gonna put some pants on as a way of starting up my day.
And now the game where we bring in experts to ask them about things they don't know anything about. It's really just a waste of their time, but they keep saying yes. If you want to know what Elvis Presley's fur lamp looks like, you can go to Graceland. If you want to know what Elvis himself was really like, you have to read Peter Guralnick's magisterial two-volume biography of the King. Mr. Guralnick has written a number of books about American music. We are delighted to have him with us. Peter Guralnick, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Oh, thanks very much.
So like I said, you've written a number of books about American music, soul music, and Sam Cooke, but you're mainly known for this great two-volume biography, two books, Last Train to Memphis and Careless Love, about Elvis. Did you ever meet Elvis?
No, I never met him, but I did write him a letter.
You did?
And I was able to validate the fact that I'd written him the letter when I did the research for my biography. We got into the archives at Graceland, and eventually we got into Vernon's office.
Well, Vernon was Elvis's father, right?
Vernon was Elvis's father. This was a big thrill, and we were there in our white gloves and stuff. Now, I had written this letter to Elvis about 1967.
What did it say?
Well, I told him that I was a big fan, that I loved the music, that I knew he got a lot of requests for interviews. I knew he didn't do any interviews, but that if he ever were of a mind to do an interview, that I was ready to travel to Memphis and do the interview, which it thrilled him, I'm sure. But it did, or it may not have thrilled him, but it did provoke a response. I got a Christmas card that year and for several years thereafter.
So that from was, Elvis?
It was, you know, a printed Christmas card, but it was from Elvis.
So are you saying that when you were looking through the files, you found this letter?
When I was looking through the files, they had to break the padlock. The file cabinets hadn't been opened since Vernon's death in about 1982. And we're going through the file cabinets, and we're finding all kinds of things. And there was my letter, you know, that Vernon had preserved in his archives. So I took that as a good stroke.
You should have, you know, you should have done. You should have just picked it up and said, "There, I've been looking for this," and walked right out. Now, how old were you when you wrote that letter to Elvis?
I was, I guess, about 23.
23.
Yeah.
And weren't you supposed to, this is like 1967, you're 23-year-old in 1967, weren't you supposed to be into, like, what, Jimi Hendrix or the Rolling Stones or like, band or the Who or bands like that at that time, or the Beatles?
No, I had just fallen into the blues when I was about 15. I mean, I was just totally
Well, so did I, but, you know, I just wrote really bad poetry and wore black turtlenecks.
Well, you know, I was inclined to that, too. But really, it was the blues that led me to everything, including to Elvis, because it was around that time that RCA put out Elvis's blues sides from Sun. And I just thought, oh, my God, Elvis was a blues singer. He missed his calling. I was just thrilled to discover Mystery Train and Good Rockin' Tonight and all these songs. So blues led me everywhere. It led me to soul. It led me to gospel. It led me to country. It led me to Elvis, too.
I have to say, like this biography is so precise. It's like, and then on this day, Elvis got up and had this for breakfast. It was his usual peanut butter and banana sandwich. But this time, the toasting was only moderate. The toast was set to 4.
And Elvis threw a fit because he wanted it darker.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, did you ever, like, find yourself, like, having lunch and going, what would Elvis Presley eat for lunch? Did you lose yourself in his life?
Well, I think with all of the books I've written, I mean, with Sam Cooke, with Sam Phillips now, it's a process of total immersion. I hope it's not immersion in breakfast practices, although cereal is important. But the thing is, it is total immersion, and you wind up in this dialogue, this imaginary dialogue, where you're looking for the answer to questions that you'll never be able to pose.
Now, this biography of Elvis, which I've read and enjoyed, and it completely changed my mind about Elvis, because you make a case that he was this incredibly important American musician. But for most people, when they think of Elvis, they think of the jumpsuit Elvis of Vegas. They think of, you know, the caricature and the sideburns. And when you were telling people, they said, "Well, Peter Guralnick, you're a well-known author. You've got all these accolades. What are you working on?" And you'd say, "I'm working on a two-volume biography of Elvis Presley." What did people say?
I didn't tell them.
Oh,
I was concerned that when the book came out, that it would just be dismissed. But you know, as it turned out, I was wrong, and I think that today people recognize the music, they recognize the art, and they recognize the conscious intent behind the music.
Now, there's a cliche, of course, of the older man, or woman, I guess, saying, "The music you kids listen to these days is terrible. You should hear the music I listen to." You must be the worst person like that who's ever lived.
It's like, no, I like all kinds of music. I mean, I'm drawn to what I'm drawn to. I'm interested in what I'm interested in, and it doesn't bother me that somebody else likes something else.
So you're going to write a two-volume biography of Kesha?
I'm not going to guarantee that.
Okay. Well, Peter Guralnick, we've asked you here to play a game we're calling...
Hey, Sexy Ladies!
Carl, pay attention to what we're doing here.
Oh, okay.
Now, that, of course, Carl was, of course, doing his best sigh. That's a line from his big hit Gangnam Style. You knew Peter Guralnick. You're perhaps the foremost authority on American popular music. We're going to talk to you, though, about K-pop, the slickly produced videos and songs from Korea that are taking the world by storm. Answer two questions correctly. You'll win a prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice on the home answering machine. Carl, who is Peter Guralnick playing for?
He is playing for Robbie Sherwin of Austin, Texas.
Ready to play?
But do I get to choose Roxanne's version?
Yeah, another man falls under your spell, Roxanne. K-pop is usually takes the form of bands, girl groups, boy groups, and they're always carefully groomed, and like they're manufactured by these agencies, with young kids training for years before being selected and formed into a group. They have to obey strict rules during their training, such as which of these: A, never be seen in public not smiling; B, they can only speak during the day in song lyrics; or C, they cannot eat or drink anything after 7 p.m.
I'm going to go for B.
You're going to go for B. They can only speak in song lyrics.
Right.
No, it's actually C. It was true of one agency. They didn't want their girls, of course, to get either chubby or hydrated. So no eating or drinking anything after 7 p.m. Okay. Now, next question. Now, K-pop idols, once they form a band or are launched as a solo act, they become incredibly famous in Korea and all over Asia. They get recognized everywhere they go, even when they wear disguises sometimes. Why? Because fans are so obsessive they can identify them by their arms and legs. B, they are said to glow. Or C, even their body odor is famous and fans can recognize it.
I'm going to go for the arms and legs, or the...
And that would be correct. The arms and legs is the answer.
All right.
They often appear wearing skimpy outfits, and thus their arms and legs can be... I mean, people say, I know that arm, and they rush up to them in public. All right, last question. You can get it all right. You can win it all if you get this one. Now, if you ever watch a K-pop video, you'll notice the incredibly elaborate dance routines. I recommend people... look for Girl Generation on YouTube if you want to see one of these. One band manager told the New York Times that the choreography in these videos and routines is inspired by what? A, Fred Astaire and Ginger Roberts. Excuse me, Roberts. Tribute to you, Roxanne. Sorry, I'll try that again. A, Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers if they were robots. B, goose-stepping North Korean soldiers, but, quote, with an infectious sense of joy, unquote. Or C, the panicked running mobs in Godzilla movies.
These are tough choices.
They are.
I'll go with Fred Astaire and Ginger Roberts.
Yes. Wise choice. Ginger Roberts had to do everything Fred Asterisk did, but backwards. So you're going to do Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers as robots is the inspiration.
Yes.
No, I'm afraid it was B, goose-stepping North Korean soldiers.
Wow.
Carl, how did Peter Guralnick do in our quiz?
He needed at least two correct answers to win, but he had just one correct answer.
Peter. Oh, bummer.
But the man knows his Elvis.
He does. And that's what's important. And I think we should ask you this, since you are probably the foremost living expert on Elvis Presley. Is he alive?
when we were in Vernon's office, there was a telephone that had been disconnected probably 30 years before. And they told us, you can't call out on that because it was disconnected 30 years before. And about 11 o'clock on the second night we were there, the telephone rang. And when we picked it up, there appeared to be no one there. But I think that may have been Elvis trying to tell us something.
Really?
Wow.
Wow.
That's scary.
I think that's cool.
I would have thought I made it up, except I was there.
Peter Guralnick is the author of the great biography of Elvis of two volumes, Last Train to Memphis and Careless Love. There are now ebook reissues of his books Feel Like Going Home and Lost Highway. Peter Guralnick, thank you so much for joining us on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thanks, Peter.
Thank you, sir.
That heartbreak hotel where I'll be just so lonely, baby. Well, I'm so lonely, I'll be just so lonely, I could die. Oh, although it's always crowded, you still can find some room.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Paula Poundstone, Roxanne Roberts, and Tom Baudet. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, Carl. In just a minute, Carl heads to Sochi to compete in the Rhymathlon. That's half limericks, half target shooting. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Roxanne, this week a man came under fire for offering what service via Skype?
Confessional.
No, close. A little. It's another ritual that's used in more extreme circumstances.
CPR.
No. You were right about the religious
the confessional.
Service. You were right about the religious, but more
exorcism.
Yes, indeed. Exorcism via Skype. For just $300, exorcist Bob Larson will rid you of demons while you're in the comfort of your own home. Now, the International Catholic Association of Exorcists, they must have great conventions. They say this can't work because the demon will, quote, throw the computer across the room. Maybe, but the more likely reason it doesn't work is that mid-exorcism, your demon is going to get distracted and check Twitter instead.
Couldn't you use the postal service? Couldn't you write a letter to the demon?
So, I mean, like, you have chess by mail?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exorcism by mail.
Right, so you write a letter going, Dear Demon,
the
power of Christ compels you.
Yeah.
Signed sincerely, The Exorcist. Right. You send it, and
then
a few days later, you get back, and it's like from the demon, it says, ha ha, your mother does obscene things in hell. Sign to the demon, and you say, ha, and you write another letter, the power of Christ compels you, and then you mail that.
Yeah, and then you say, and by the way, my head just twisted around.
Roxanne, Valentine's Day is coming up, and a shop in London is offering the perfect thing for those who don't have a date because they got dumped. What is it?
I'm trying to think, aside from another date, is it revenge related?
It is.
It is revenge related. Is it poison?
It is not poison.
I've known people.
It comes with pins you can stick in.
A voodoo doll.
Yes, indeed. Now you can use a custom made voodoo doll.
And where do the pins go?
Well, it's up to you. You can get a custom-made voodoo doll to get back at your ex for those who don't want to go the traditional route of arson or self-loathing. Just submit a picture of your ex and you give them $30. They'll send you a voodoo doll bearing your ex's likeness, which is just the sort of thing you want in your home when you start dating again. You can pick specific curses, as well as sticking in the pins, to lay on your ex. There's impotence, hair loss, quote, boob sag. Instructions that come with the doll say,
boy, there's a lot of these dolls in circulation, isn't there?
Paula, a new study shows...
Oh, boy.
Yes, that doing what might help save your troubled marriage? Not yours, but somebody's.
Yeah. Gee, give me a hint, Peter. This is not my area.
You start out with something mild, like Sleepless in Seattle, then you make your way as you progress to You've Got Mail.
A constant supply of Tom Hanks movies.
Well, not just that might help, but the specific kind of Tom Hanks movies. These movies often
love story movies.
Well, romantic comedies.
Romantic comedies.
Yeah,
well,
movies about marriage.
Yeah,
scientists
like Captain Phillips,
for example.
You know, I've said it before, and I'm going to say it again. Honestly, if Johnny Depp does not win for that...
Johnny Depp.
There is no, for the Academy Award.
Yeah, who did he play?
The pirate.
So what they say was that, you know, not only are you supposed to watch these movies, but you're supposed to watch these movies and then talk about them with your partner. So you watch, say, Captain Phillips, and you say, you know, when they hit the guy with the butt of the gun, that was cruel, and I should not hit you with the butt of a gun. And then the other person says, oh, that's really nice of you to say. I would not like you to hit me with the butt of a gun.
They're able to use the material to heal their own lives.
Well, to reflect upon good relationships. Yeah. Now,
I would think that it might cause, because a lot of romantic comedies obviously are very unrealistic.
Yes.
You know, movies are very unrealistic. So I would think that it would cause maybe some friction. Like, for example, say you watched Sound of Music and you with your loved one that sometimes there's friction with. Don't you think there'd be a point where the woman might say, you know, you would never carry us over the Alps?
Yep.
I went to take my then wife to see the new version of Bram Stoker's Dracula,
mm-hmm.
And she said to me, "You would never live 1,000 years just to come back to me, as Dracula does."
I think
the
that's
character.
A fair criticism.
And I said, "You're right." I said,
but "Oh my God, you said the wrong thing."
I know.
What are you, nuts?
No, I mean, I just didn't think it was fair to be compared to Dracula.
No, it's
unfavorably.
It's a total hypothetical. This was your chance to get in there with Jake. Of course I would. That's all you had to say. Because none of it's going to happen anyway.
Yeah, that's true. Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows right here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, and our shows March 20th in Kalamazoo, Michigan, and next week in Phoenix, Arizona. Get your tickets right now, Phoenix, or you'll be left outside in the perfect weather. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Angie from Eugene, Oregon.
Oh, Eugene, how are things there?
It is surprisingly snowy today.
And what do you do there in Eugene?
I mainly homeschool my kids.
When you homeschool your kid, did they have projects?
Yeah, absolutely.
So okay. You assign the project, and then you say, but you have to ask me for the supplies?
Yeah, right.
Do you ever get substitutes who are like, "Hi, your mother isn't here today. I'm Mr. Johnson."
That would be nice.
That would be.
Angie, welcome to the show. Carl Castle is going to read you 3 news-related limericks with a last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly, and 2 of the limericks will be a big winner. Ready to go?
I think so.
All right, here's your first limerick.
On his sickbed, Prince Charles did conclude, "To get well, one must have the right mood. These biscuits and scones don't get the job done. We need better hospital."
Food?
Yes, food.
Phew.
Very good. Britain's Prince Charles, heir to the throne, is turning his gaze to the task of improving the world's hospital food. The prince is pushing for local ingredients, silver-plated serving dishes, and a mandate that Jell-O be eaten with a proper Jell-O spoon. Here's the thing, though. Hospital food is like Prince Charles is now trying to solve the problems experienced mainly by stand-up comedians. Like, next up, he'll do airplane food, and then he's going to try to solve how ladies be crazy. Here is your next limerick.
We are smart because we travel in schools. We need no thumbs, not like you fools. We get food with a lever because we're so clever. We fish learn to use basic
tools.
Yes, indeed. A study of Atlantic cod proves we are vastly underestimating the intelligence of fish and vastly overestimating the intelligence of humans. The fish were observed using their identification tags. They were, you know, had these tags for a study, and they were using these tags to pull a string attached to a feeder which released food into their enclosure. Now that we know fish can use tools, there's really no excuse for the condition of that castle in their aquarium.
What job would you be in that you're given the assignment of the study of Atlantic cod?
Ichthyologists.
Theologists?
Ichthyologists.
What the hell is an ichthyologist? I never heard of that.
A scientist who studies fish.
You know, the freaky thing is that all of you knew. You all turned to me. Ichthyologist. You know, I have the feeling that I was hit on the head and just was, like, unconscious for years at a time. Because there's no explanation for why you guys know so much more than I do. Remember the time I didn't know what the Kama Sutra was? I'm not sure that at this point I have the smartness to use my ID tag to open a feeder.
Here is your last limerick.
Sloppy meals were true first date murder. There's no comeback, and don't blame the server. Just head rule number one, pinky under the bun, and you'll manage to not spill your...
Oh, help me out, Paula.
What comes on a bun?
Burger.
Burger, yes.
Oh, gee.
You've been eating your hamburgers wrong, ladies and gentlemen. After 4 months, a team of Japanese scientists, mechanics, and dentists have developed the optimum way to eat a hamburger. This is what you do. I want everybody listening right now to hold up their hands as if they're going to eat a big hamburger. Now, you got all four fingers on top with your thumb on the bottom.
Yeah, that's
like
wrong.
Most people. Take the pinky finger and put it under the burger. And then you hold it, and that keeps... And you all know this phenomenon. You take a big bite of the front of the burger, and the back burger goes... Right? It slides out. This will prevent that.
Wow. Okay?
You know, that's really... It's a great idea. Why did it take a team of Japanese scientists to figure it out? You wonder, think somebody would have...
And it took them 4 months.
Yeah.
Working on this project.
When you
and then
say
somebody
it,
says, well, just take your pinky, put it down there. That'll work.
They're Japanese. That's not how they talk.
Carl, how did Angie do in our quiz?
Angie had 3 correct answers, Peter. So, Angie, I'll be doing the message on your home answering machine or voicemail.
Well done.
Good job, Angie.
Thank you.
I'm in the kitchen. I'm going hamburger. Throwing hamburger. They got beef because I'm murder. I'm in the kitchen. Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Roxanne Roberts has the lead, Peter. She has 4 points. Tom Baudette and Paula Poundstone are tied for second. Each has 2.
We have flipped a coin. Paula has elected to go second. That means, Tom, you're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. On Wednesday, the Department of Homeland Security warned that terrorists may try to smuggle explosives onto Olympic-bound planes in blank.
Toothpaste tube.
Right. Although it plunged by over 300 points on Monday, the blank rebounded on Tuesday.
The stock market.
Yes. The Republicans in the Senate successfully filibustered a bill to extend blank benefits.
The unemployment benefits.
Right. After a leaked phone call appeared online Thursday, Russia accused the U.S. of assisting the protesters in blank.
Ukraine.
Right. Their commercial featuring America the Beautiful, sung in different languages, caused some angry viewers to swear that they would never drink blank again.
Coca-Cola.
Right. A judge in Missouri ruled Monday that it is not illegal for drivers to blank to warn other drivers of an upcoming speed trap.
The flash the light.
Yeah, a man in Pennsylvania attempted to rob a Hallmark store by blanking.
Pretending to be like the Easter Bunny, so the Easter Chicken. You know, I don't know.
You know.
Didn't
what he did appropriately was that he gave the cashier a greeting card. Very nice card. You open it up. Handwritten message. Give me all the money or I will kill you. Police say he would have had a better chance with roses are red, violets are blue. Give me all the money or I shoot you. As it was, the woman said no, and he left the store and was arrested. Carl, how did Tom do?
Tom had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. He now has 14 points, and Tom has the lead.
All right. Woo-hoo! Very good, Tom. Paula, you're up next. Fill in the blank. Almost 1 million people were left without power in the Northeast on Wednesday after the area was hit with another blank.
Snowstorm.
Right. Although the CDC said Wednesday that it was safe, some doctors are still advising residents not to drink the water in blank.
West Virginia.
Right. After it released its first earnings report Wednesday, the stock price of the social networking site blank dropped sharply.
Twitter.
Right. New research published this week linked eating too much blank with an increase in fatal heart disease.
This made me want to shoot myself. Sugar.
Right. During the ceremony to celebrate Groundhog Day, New York Mayor de Blasio accidentally blanked.
Stepped on the groundhog.
No, he dropped it.
Oh.
During their media tour of the U.S. this week, 2 formerly imprisoned members of the Russian punk group Pussy Riot were blanked.
They were dropped from the group.
Right. This week, critics expressed concern that the winner on the reality TV show Blank had lost too much weight.
Biggest Loser.
Right. Police in Maine, responding to reports of a person screaming from a home, discovered the screams were actually coming from a blank.
Television, I don't know.
A male pig overjoyed to be in a pen with 5 sows in heat.
Whoa!
When the neighbor heard the screams, she was afraid a terrible fight was going on next door. She didn't realize that what she was hearing was actually one male pig's best day ever. Yeah. Carl, how did Paula do? I think she did quite well.
Peter, she had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. She now has 14 points, and she's tied with Tom for the lead.
Okay. So, How many, then, does Roxanne need to win?
5 to tie, 6 to win outright.
Roxanne, this is for the game. Here we go. Fill in the blank. New allegations emerged this week suggesting that blank knew about the lane closures that caused a massive traffic jam in New Jersey.
Governor Chris Christie.
Right. On Wednesday, CVS became the first major pharmacy chain to stop selling blank.
Tobacco.
Cigarettes, good enough. Janet Yellen was sworn in on Monday morning, making her the new head of the blank.
Federal Reserve.
Right. This week, Mitch McConnell and John Boehner agreed that a blank reform bill was unlikely to pass this year.
Immigration or debt ceiling, depending on which press
immigration.
Conference.
Okay. Faced with a rash of burglaries, police in Florida are providing citizens with blanks.
Kazoos.
With signs that say, no valuables here, stay away. Although she was not the highest scorer, a 12-week-old English sheepdog named Ginger was named the MVP at this year's blank.
Puppy ball.
Puppy ball. Sony announced that in order to focus on its TV sales, it would no longer be making blank.
Walkmans.
No, they gave that up a while ago. Computers. A robbery at a bait and tackle shop in Minnesota was thwarted when the thief was scared off by blank.
By the singing, talking bass.
Yes.
Fish.
By a big mouth Billy Bass singing fish. When the thief broke into the Hooked on Fishing bait and tackle shop, he was on the lookout for alarms and surveillance cameras, but he wasn't expecting to be serenaded by a motion-activated mechanical fish singing Take Me to the River. Carl, did Roxanne do well enough to win as she loves to do?
She needed 6 to win. She had 6 correct answers. So with 16 points, Roxanne Roberts is this week's
there
champion.
There it is.
Well done, Roxanne. In just a minute, to celebrate 10 years of Facebook, our panelists will predict how we will waste our time 10 years from today. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the Economic Development Authority of Fairfax County, Virginia, home to creative people and creative companies at powerofideas.org. The George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, a source for what works in education. Learn more at edutopia.org. And CarMax, offering more than 35,000 used cars and trucks online and in stores from coast to coast. Learn more at CarMax. Max.com. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, Benevolent Overlord. Philip Gotica writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our assistant house manager is Tyler Green. Our CFO is Ann Nien. Our intern is People for the Sethical Treatment of Animals, Kelly. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Delarchik and Mohammed Mao. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Eva Walchover, Miles Dernboss, and Emily Ecton. Technical directions from Lorna White, with special thanks this week to our friend Gary Yek. Our production coordinator is Robert Newhouse. Our senior producer is Ian Chillog, and the executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mr. Michael Danforth. Now, panel, how will we be wasting our time 10 years from now? Tom Baudet.
Well, as the second term of President Chris Christie winds down, Americans will be wasting a lot of time stalled in revenge traffic jams across the United States.
Roxanne Roberts.
We'll still be trying to scrub all those drunken spring break pictures and slightly offensive jokes off all our Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Instagram accounts.
And Paula Pasta.
We will count and categorize Jimmy Fallon's jokes for fun and profit.
Well, if any of that happens, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Tom Baudet, Roxanne Roberts, and Paula Poundstone. Thanks to all of you for listening. Peter Sagan is me. We'll see you next week in Phoenix. This is NPR.